Good evening, everyone. I'm Corina Pereira. Welcome you all once again to our SGR Knowledge Foundations Knowledge Series. The session of Knowledge Series is organized every month. Irrespective of the pandemic and lockdown, the sessions of Knowledge Series will continue to encourage, motivate, and enhance the energy of the audience of Knowledge Series. Knowledge Series is a point of origin for the Central India's first multilingual literature festival, Orange City Literature Festival, OCLF Nagpur. OCLF is now entering into the fourth edition this November 2022 after the success of past three editions of it. Knowledge Series session is now a part of Orange City Literature Festival. Today's session is the 63rd session of this series and is supported by Readomania Publication. If ocean ships and long voyages at sea sound exciting to you, then you would like to read the books of our today's speaker, Beetashok Chatterjee. Beetashok Chatterjee has spent over 40 years working in the merchant navy, and his stories are a reflection of his experiences and imagination. He joined the merchant navy at young age and loved it, retiring only after having completed more than 45 years at sea. He currently lives in New Delhi, India, with his memories and family. His hobbies include listening to Western music, reading fiction, and watching cricket. He loves Hollywood and Bollywood movies too, and also a chilled beer. This is his second collection of stories. His first collection, Driftwood Stories Washed Ashore, gave him so much pleasure and a little pain creating it that he decided this is what he wanted to do for the rest of his life. For today's session, we welcome Mr. Beetashok Chatterjee, where he's going to tell you mysteries of being on the ocean in his session on Living a Life Ocean Size, The Chronicles of a Seafarer, in conversation with Ms. Indrani Ganguly, where we are happy to have Ms. Ganguly with us once again. Ms. Ganguly is the main editor of Readomania. She has lost count of the books she has edited. Also, numbers were never her forte, but creating books is what keeps her going. She can snip out the potential of an author and will bring out the best from them, no matter what. Well, there is a lot more to tell about them, but for now, we would go ahead with our session on Living a Life Ocean Size, The Chronicles of a Seafarer. I would now request ma'am to kindly take over the session.
Thank you for the lovely introductions, Corina. Thank you so much. Hello and welcome, Beetashok.
Hello, Indrani. Hello, Corina.
Hi, and it's lovely to meet you after so long. We've done so many books together, but finally we get to see each other face to face.
I know.
Tell me, Beetashok, from a sailor man to a storyteller, what was your journey like? How did it all begin? Tell us something about yourself.
Yeah, I've always loved writing. Right from school days, English was my favorite subject. And while my friends wanted to become astronauts and army generals and, you know, racing car drivers, I wanted to be an author. I wanted to be a published author. That has been my dream ever since I can remember. So this sea career was, you know, by chance, you know, like a stroke of serendipity, if you call it that. And I grew to love the sea, but that's another different story, how I came out to sea, but it just happened by chance. And I gave up thinking about creative writing for many, many years because I was trying to learn the job and work my way up. I got busy with my promotional exams and with life in general. And so it's only about 10, 11 years ago when I finally found that I had time to myself and I don't have to, you know, run around working or trying to learn my job, I started creative writing again. I mean, earlier, the only creative writing I was doing was composing emails and reports just to stay out of trouble. But this was actual creative writing. I started 10, 11 years ago. I started with poems. And what inspired me was the sea. So I started with sea poems. And I've ended up writing about 40 plus poems. And short stories happened much little later. Just about 5, 6 years ago, I started writing short stories.
Wonderful. Now, your first collection of short stories, Driftwood Stories Washed Ashore, it's a collection of very entertaining and thoughtful stories of and about sailors. Tell us, Mitashok, does the ocean play a catalyst in your creativity? You're always around the ocean, right? So does it play a catalyst in your creativity?
Thank you for saying that my book was thoughtful and entertaining. I'm glad you found it that way. Yeah, here's the book in case you want to remember. I'm sorry, here's the book. Driftwood. So the ocean, yes, has played a vast role in my creativity. The ocean itself is a vast, tempestuous place, and it looks different every time with the time of day or with the season or with the state of weather. The ocean looks different, though beautiful all the time to me, but it looks different. And the ocean also gave me the time and the peace of mind over long voyages to, you know, sort of get my thoughts together and form coherent storylines, draw from my own experiences and from the experiences of others. And I put everything on paper, and that's how these poems happened and Driftwood happened, and even the later short stories. So ocean, to answer your question, has been a catalyst.
What is the writing process that you adopt? You know, does writing come to you effortlessly, or do you need to get some kind of inspiration? Do you get inspired by fellow authors or some author you've read in the past, or by nature or by the ocean, like I said earlier? What is your writing process?
Well, it's not effortless. I mean, I wish it was. And I envy writers who find it effortless. For me, the whole process involves writing it first, then reading it, rereading it, editing it, rewriting it, rewriting whole chapters if necessary. It doesn't come so easily to me, but I enjoy the whole process because I like to get it right. You know, I want to finally end up sending a story to the publisher when I don't have to. I don't think I should change a single word in it. So that's the way I look at it. You know, you can call me a nitpicker or a perfectionist or whatever, but I am like that, you know. And that's why I don't like to enter these short story competitions. There's always a deadline, hurry, 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 and you write something and you send it off, and the next day you tear your hair. You know, you said, why the hell did I send that? I could have written this instead, or I could have deleted that and added this. So short story competitions are not for me. This whole process of, you know, editing and rewriting it comes naturally to me. And I have been influenced, means I read a lot. And I've been reading all my life, you know. So, of course, unknowingly, I mean, subconsciously, all good authors have had their influence on me.
And I can vouch for the perfectionist past, because when your stories come to me, they are so clean, they barely need any kind of editing. So I can vouch for that.
Thank you for saying that.
Mitashok, your brother is acclaimed writer Upamanyu Chatterjee. Was he a big influence on you, and do more members of your family write? What was it like growing up? You know, was it a very literary milieu in which you grew up?
Kind of. Well, my brother, of course, he is a famous writer with a cult following, Upamanyu Chatterjee. He's got the Sahitya Academy Award, and he's got this some award from the French government as well. His first book, English August, was made into a film. So, but he has not influenced my writing directly. We both, as kids, we both enjoyed reading and writing. We both were voracious readers and we wrote also. But I won't say he influenced me. He's in a different league. I'm very proud of him. And he's in the big league. So to answer your question, that is... And regarding the other members, my son is not a writer per se, but he's in the publishing world. He's a literary agent and he's also a professional editor like you. So my parents were... my father used to write a lot of Bengali poems for a magazine those days called Desh. So yeah. Several of his poems were published in Desh, but although I never read them. He had, maybe we inherited it from him.
So part genetic and part self-inculcated, I guess.
Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah. Vitashuk, there's a very general perception about merchant sailors leading very reckless and flashy lifestyles, being womanizers too. Is that correct? Do you agree?
You forgot to add drunkards, losers, liars.
Sailors are legendary drunkards, from Captain Haddock to many more, even some in your own book, Driftwood, we have seen they're legendary.
Yeah, correct. Literature's full of, I know, literature's full of these kinds of sailors. I agree.
Have they been stereotyped, do you think? Have they been stereotyped? Because I don't see you as a, cussing and, fully alcoholic sailor. You seem like a total gentleman. So,
appearances are deceptive, of course.
Okay.
But I'm not as bad as those guys, like Captain. I'm not as bad as Captain Haddock, of course. But those days are gone, frankly speaking. From shipping has become more and more restrictive with more and more international regulations coming in. And that freedom has been totally curtailed now. I mean, I'm lucky I joined sea in the 70s and I got a lot of freedom. We got a lot of show leave. There were not many restrictions binding us. We had fun on board. We had fun ashore. And I can imagine what it must have been for the sailors of the 50s and 60s, a previous generation. No, it was pretty good. It was a lot of fun and maybe a little as you described. But of late, it's not the same. Regulations have become so stringent that, a seaman has to just toe the line if he wants to keep his job. He has to follow all the rules and regulations. Many companies don't have alcohol. They have a zero alcohol policy on board. So you can't even enjoy a nice can of beer at the end of a hard day. And most ships have now CCTV camera trained in all the public places. So Big Brother in the head office is watching you. They have the feed. They can switch on any time and see what the crew is doing in the recreation room or on the bridge. So I'm glad I got out of it. I saw very good days, but it's no longer any fun for the seamen of today.
Right. Now in Driftwood, you have in one of your stories written a very recurrent line, he was just a seaman. There's a lot of pathos in that line, almost as if seamen are misunderstood perennially. Would you like to comment on that?
Yeah, it's true. I think it's absolutely true. They're not only misunderstood, they're also mistreated. People forget, and the world forgets that there is no substitute for shipping. There is no way is it possible to transport millions of tons of cargo and raw materials across thousands of miles of ocean. The shipping keeps trade alive. Economies will collapse. Even during the lockdown last year, shipping was continued, unabated, relentlessly, because trade had to continue. Otherwise, countries would have gone bankrupt. People don't realize that. People don't give seamen their due respect. And seamen also, they don't command it. I'm sorry to say. Seamen are simple people, little gullible, not used to the ways of the world. So, they get fooled easily. They fall in love with anyone who's nice to them. So I would say they are mistreated and also they are misunderstood.
Is it because they are like detached from the civilization? They're sailing for most part of the year.
Yes.
No one but a bunch of fellow sailors as accompaniment.
Exactly. It's an unnatural life. And they are meeting like-minded people who are simple folk, just come out to earn for their families and go back. The problem is they spend a longer time on board than at home. You know, most seamen, I'm not talking about Indian officers, I'm talking about seamen worldwide, they spend 7 to 9 months on a ship and then just 3 months at home before they have to go back. Because at home, there is no pay, there's no salary. So they have to, they're compelled to go back soon. So they are out of touch with reality, not only with their families, with the world at large. They're not, you know, street smart, most of them. I'm only generalized.
Does it get depressing also, you know, no view except water all the time?
Yeah, I mean, it's, you need a strength of mind and character to remain at sea. That's why not many last, you know. Especially the young seamen of today. Nobody I know wants to remain at sea. They have specific purpose. They want to earn so much money, buy an apartment or get their sister married or whatever, and then they want to quit. There's no love for the sea left anymore. It's very sad.
So would you have been a different person if you were not a sailor? Does the sea calm you or make you more philosophical or more detached as a human being?
Absolutely, absolutely. I would have been a different person, and the sea had, as you said, you know, calmed me, gave me perspective. Like I was just a lone speck on the vast ocean. That's a very humbling thought, you know. And gave me the time and the creativity to compose Driftwood and my second volume of sea stories as well. So if I had not been at sea, of course, Driftwood wouldn't have happened. And you wouldn't be interviewing me right now.
Yeah. In your collection, Driftwood, there is a story, Little Girl Lost. You've written about a young Filipino girl who joins a merchant vessel as a deck cadet. Now, tell us, how difficult is it for a woman to adjust in a ship full of rowdy male sailors? What is the role of a captain in normalizing things for her in the ship?
Yeah, it's not easy. You see, patriarchy is everywhere. You know, as they say, men will be men, or whatever. So whether it's Hollywood or Bollywood or the corporate world or even the armed forces or even the courts, you know, everywhere, the patriarchy reigns supreme. So why should it be different on any ship? But having said that, there are very strict regulations against sexual harassment in most shipping companies. And it's the captain's responsibility to ensure that they are enforced. So if he finds some incident like that on board, he must take action and he must report the matter to the head office. And if he does not, and the head office comes to know that something did take place and the captain did not report it, the captain's job is on the line. So a captain must feel responsible and he must take adequate measures to ensure there is no sexual harassment on board his ship.
So do we have a lot of women joining merchant sailing nowadays?
Yes, not too many, but they are coming, even in India. In India, a lot of girls are coming on board. Too bad I quit before that.
Oh, yeah. Now, in the vastness of the ocean, where the only human connect is your fellow sailors, even a winged visitor, you know, can stoke the interest and caring attitude of sailors, as you've portrayed in one of your stories. How do you find to get back to the general civilization when you are in the high seas? Do you miss home? Or how much time do you need to be away from home and sailing when you actually find to get back on land?
After a while, it gets to be too much. I agree. But personally, I used to feel terribly homesick just when I was very young, you know, when I just started off my sea career as a deck cadet. Later on, I grew to like the sea, I grew to like my job, and I didn't feel so homesick anymore. I have been too long at sea to feel homesick. Of course, I used to miss the wife and the kids occasionally, but I'd say not as much, you know, as some of the people I've seen do. And I would think 5-6 months at sea is the maximum before you go nuts. You have to get back home. So that is the upper limit. Fortunately, I became a captain pretty early in the 80s itself. And our service terms and conditions improved. So I was never more than four months away. And my last 10 years, I was just 3 months at sea, 3 months, three on, three off. So I had, fortunately, I had very good working conditions. But I think it's natural to feel homesick. I don't think it is odd at all. People do feel homesick. But having said that, this technology has improved vastly. And now one can keep in daily touch with our families. We can make calls. We can make, we can have video calls also. We can keep in touch on Facebook and WhatsApp and social media. So it's not so bad. And, you know, guys shouldn't really complain. If you're at sea, just earn your money and shut up. No, it's not so bad.
In fact, when you talk about technology, that is going to be my next question. You know, you've sailed for more than 45 years and you've seen the old school ways of navigation as well as today's cutting edge technology, maritime technology. Is there any inherent difference between the sailors of yore and the ones today? In their attitude, in their working, conditions, and in their work culture, ethics, any change that you've observed?
Yes, a vast difference. Not just the technology, it's just in the mindset and the attitude of the sailors. The old sailors, and not only my generation before that, and before that as well, they were proper seafarers. I mean, for them, seafaring was a way of life, and they would remain at sea till they were too old to do so, till they were too old to step on the gangway. So they were those kind of people. The seamen of today, they have come, it's very clear, they have come only for a specific period. They want to make enough money to, as I mentioned before, to buy that house that they wanted, or to get their sisters married, or to have a bank balance. And they always look for a job ashore after that, preferably in a marine shipping company where they can put their experience to use. So that is the difference. But again, it's not, you can't grudge them that, because seafaring is not so much fun anymore. With all their restrictions, and there is no shore leave nowadays, most ports, you know, with this is international security and these terrorist attacks, hardly, you don't get any shore leave, you don't have any freedom on board as well as ashore. So I don't really blame them. Seafaring is no longer as enjoyable as it used to be.
Now, when you just spoke about the dangers, you've written about pirates in Driftwood. What prepares you mentally when you sailed through the risky channels? Does a piracy episode scar a sailor for life? What makes them come back to the sea then, you know, after a piracy episode?
Piracy is horrible, you know, and fortunately, I was attacked by pirates twice, but I escaped on both occasions. This was in the Gulf of Aden. Again, I was captain.
That's a
notorious zone off Somalia. So yeah. My ships were very huge and very high, and then when they were chasing me, I went at full speed and I went zigzag, in a zigzag motion. So what happened was the wake that the ship created was very turbulent, and the boats were tossing up and down and finally couldn't keep up with us. So we escaped on both the occasions. But so I'm lucky that I did not have pirates board my ship, otherwise I don't know what, maybe I wouldn't be here. So and if you have had a pirate attack and pirates have boarded you, it must be a traumatic experience, because they are vicious and violent. And I don't think those people come back to sea. I don't see them coming back to sea. They must have sought some other kind of profession. I came back because, you know, okay, I have to earn for my family, and I didn't, wasn't really harmed.
Mr. Ashok, you're such a talented storyteller, and it is evident that one of the reasons for this is because you're a keen observer of life. Do you have storytelling sessions when you are free in the high seas? Do you keep a diary to write little nuggets of stuff that interest you as and when they happen?
No, I didn't have any storytelling sessions on board because I thought that would be unprofessional. I mean, who wants to hear my stories anyway and get bored to death? And that's what I thought, you know. I kept my stories to myself. So, diary, yes. Right from a young age, as a young officer in the late 70s, I've been maintaining a journal of sorts, just jotting down my thoughts, my experiences, not necessarily sea related, just, you know, anything that comes to mind. And I'm glad I did, because all those notes proved invaluable in the making of Driftwood. Yeah. And there's another collection of sea stories, which you probably haven't read. A lot of those, that stuff has gone into that as well. So I'm glad I kept that journal.
Yeah. There's this, you know, legend about sailors being like thick friends, you know. Tell us about the feeling of brotherhood among fellow sailors.
The sea, the ship is not only our workplace, it's also our home for many, many months at a stretch. So people from different countries, different religion, different ethnicities, different castes, different creed, they all come together. And we, for those few months, we are just one united family against the rest of the world. You know, that's what it feels like. Against the rest, I mean, against nature, against pirates, against anyone who would, you know, disturb our peace of mind, or anyone who would try to do us harm. So we are, so this bond develops. It's natural. It's, it has to just happen, you know. So, and many friendships have formed on ships which have stood the test of time. I can vouch for myself. So I have many, many friends who have sailed with 20 years ago, 30 years ago, and still in touch with them. So that's the special bond seafarers have.
And are there lesser distractions while sailing? Do you think you can write more when you are at sea?
Yeah. There are no distractions at all. If you choose not to be distracted, I mean, once you do your job and you choose not to be disturbed, nobody will disturb you. So it's for someone with creative hobbies, you know, like writing or painting or composing music, I think seafaring is a great vocation for him. And he will get the opportunity and the time and the peace of mind to pursue his hobby. So I'm glad I did, because I wrote as well as earned for my family. I also, you know, wrote whatever I wanted to write. So I'm grateful for this chance to have been at sea.
Amazing. You also write poetry, and you write short stories, and now you're going to attempt nonfiction as well. You've already submitted your manuscript. So do you consider yourself to be more of a poet or a storyteller or a chronicler? And do you plan to publish your stories, poetry anytime soon?
I don't know what I am. I guess more of a storyteller as of now. I mean, because I haven't written a poem for many years. I've just last 6 years or so, I started short stories. I haven't attempted a poem. So, I started my creative writing about 10, 11 years ago. I started with poetry. So, and I ended up writing more than 40 plus poems. They're all sea poems, by the way. And I tried to make them with different rhyme and meter so that they could be converted into songs. And some have been, you know, by my musically talented shipmates and colleagues, some of them have turned out to very nice songs. And I remember on one ship, we formed a band called SOS, And and if you listen to the lyrics by yours truly, and the music and everything's by them, and we had musical instruments on board, and they sound professional, at least to me. So it was a lot of fun. So there are some of my poems which have been converted into songs. Now, regarding publishing, there is no market for poems. No publisher wants poems. So I may have to self-publish. But for that, I will need to write 7-8 poems more, you know, and make it around 50. And then maybe I could go for it. It's definitely on my bucket list.
You've authored 2 books so far, Driftwood Stories Washed Ashore and The People Tree Stories About Us and Them. How are these 2 books different?
Okay. Driftwood is stories set at sea, or the main protagonist is a seafarer. So these are not just for seafarers alone. They're for anybody who likes to read fiction. Tales of, you know, adventure, piracy, love, romance, intrigue, human relationships, everything is in this book. And aimed at the non-seafarer as well. My second book is The People Tree. There's not a whiff of the sea about them. So I call them land stories. And here, each story I've tried to make as different from the other as possible. Like from the Khalistan insurgency in the 80s to the Mumbai underworld, from a tragic love affair in Hyderabad to a mature gay relationship, from a teenage crush to a friendship bond under the most unusual circumstances. I've even gone overseas and I've written a story about the 9/11 New York attack. I've even robbed an art museum in London in the process. So there's a historical story set in Maharashtra. So there's enough variety, I hope. So that's how these 2 books are different. I've also contributed to an anthology, which is a lockdown anthology called The Phoenix Rises. And I have an essay in it. But this book has also a lot of eminent writers. So I'm very pleased to be rubbing shoulders with that.
And which one is your personal favorite story from The People Tree?
Fortunately, it's nobody else has said that it's their favorite. My favorite is the last one called Heartbreak. It's about a teenage crush, you know, which just went wrong. I don't know. I just relate to that story very much.
And do stories which have seafarers or the sea or the ocean as part of the plot come naturally to you? Or do you have to struggle a bit more when you are writing stories about land lovers, stories which are rooted on terra firma? Or is it the same?
Right. No, it's not the same. For the land stories, I have to do much more research and just to get it right. So sea stories come easily to me. You know, in fact, I'm thinking of writing a murder mystery set on board. And I think once I get the plot right, if I set it on board, it won't be difficult for me. So I know that's the scenario I chose immediately, you know, set it on board so that I don't have to struggle with places and...
Yeah, because when you say about struggle, what struck me the most when I was working on The People Tree is that the sheer variety innovativeness in every story, you know, you have no 2 stories are alike. You have not only plot-wise, but even geographically, you have traveled multiple places and the research that you've done is very evident. So how do the ideas germinate? Do you recall an event, or have you heard from someone, or have you read something, snatches from stuff you might have viewed on television? How do these ideas come? Because they're so incredible and each one different from the other.
Thank you. That was the plan. That was the intention. And I'm glad you appreciated that. I wanted each story to be different from the other. So by the time you finish reading the book, it's not just a, you know, blur of forgettable tales. Okay, finished. You know, I'm sorry to say that I've read some story collections by authors who, after about the next day, I don't remember any of the stories. So I didn't want that to happen. I wanted every story to be, or not every, almost every story to be, you know, etched in the reader's mind. So thank you for saying that. And the result is just hard work. And I took my time over each story. I mean, there is no formula for it. You told me that I'm a perfectionist. Many have called me nitpicker, whatever. But I am like that. I like to get it right, you know. And it has to be authentic. It has to be real. So I just worked hard on each of them, and I took my time over them.
Which shows in the end product.
Thank you,
Vitashok. You are now attempting a nonfiction. Where you chronicle maritime disasters, you know, one of the few of the most iconic maritime disasters, the mystery behind them, the investigations, and you have done incredible research on each disaster. What was the idea behind this book and how did it germinate?
Well, the publisher wanted me to write some nonfiction, right, for a change, because nonfiction sells better. I can't disagree with that. He knows the market. So then I was thinking, what can I write? The only thing I can offer him is, you know, ships and shipping. That is my area of expertise. My son came up with this idea. Why don't you write about major disasters like Titanic? Everyone's heard of Titanic. Why don't you write about major shipwrecks like that? You know, how? So I thought that was a good idea. So I have completed and sent the manuscript to the publisher. I have just completed. It's called Mayday, Maritime Disasters That Shook the World. This is a compilation of 13 major maritime disasters.
Okay, Vitashok, I think we can go ahead.
Okay, where was I? The book. So the book is, as I told you what it's called. It's called Mayday, Maritime Disasters That Shook the World. And I have described 13 major incidents. I thought 13 was an appropriate number. That's why.
Yeah.
Major disasters in the sense that either just not only for the number of lives lost, but for the damage caused to the environment and livelihoods, or for the media attention they gathered, the media blitz that gave shipping a bad name. So whatever the reasons may be, these were the most famous shipping disasters through history. And I have described what happened, how it happened, why it happened, and could it have been averted? If so, how? So I have given my own take on that. But the facts and figures are all from the public domain, but I've given my own spin to it. And I hope people enjoy it. I've not aimed it at the seafarer. You know, it's not too technical. I made it as general as possible. But whereas all the nautical terms and all which I couldn't avoid using, I have explained them in footnotes on every page. Mm-hmm. So I hope people like it.
Vitashok, how much of you is there in every story that you write? How much of you in every fictional story that you write? For the stories in Driftwood, are you any one of the characters in any of the stories?
Yes and no. I don't want to. You see, there's a lot of fiction, there's a lot of fact, and they all blend with each other. And sometimes even I don't know where fact has ended and fiction has begun. But I wouldn't like to go into detail of each story, but several of them, yes, they involved me. Like there was one, Stairway to Heaven. There were about two friends who form a lifelong friendship. One of them was me. So, you know, and there are others as well. I'll have to go and check out the book.
There's a lot of music in that story.
Wait, I'm going to say 50%, yeah.
Okay. So, Vitashok, two done, one almost on the way of getting done, your third book. what next? What is there on your table right now?
Well, there's one collection of short stories already completed and already sent, which I hope is acceptable and gets published. And then, so that would be number four. And then I have the rest of my life to figure it out. As I said, I'm thinking of a murder mystery or something, on a full length novel, enough short stories for the time being. Let's see how it goes.
I really look forward to whatever you write, because you are one of my most favorite short story writers. And I really look forward to what you can do with the long format. I want to read that murder mystery. I have read a few chapters of Mayday. I've thoroughly enjoyed them. And
okay, you have? Okay,
yeah, I have.
Good.
Yeah, the first draft that you sent, I have. And I really look forward to whatever that you pen next. And I sincerely wish I get to work on them. So thank you. It was lovely conversing with you.
Thank you so much. Lovely talking to you. And I think you did a great job on both Driftwood and The People Tree.
Thank you so much, Bhikshu. Over to you, Corinna.
Wow, the discussion was so interesting. Now I really feel like to go and get the books right now.
You must. Yeah.
Thank you so much, sir. Thank you so much, ma'am. I would like to thank Mr. Bhitashok Chatterjee, sir, and Indrani Ganguly, ma'am, for their insightful discussion and giving their precious time for this SGR Knowledge Foundation 63rd Knowledge Series session. I also thank Chairman of Raisuni Group of Institutions, Mr. Sunil Raisuni, for giving this opportunity, and Readomania Publication for the support to this session. I cannot miss thanking all our viewers for attending this session. The session will be there on the YouTube channel of SGR Knowledge Foundation page and also the OCLF Nagpur page. Thank you so much. Please do subscribe our page. We will be coming up with more session with various insightful topics. For more event updates, please subscribe to our SGR Knowledge Foundation Facebook page and Orange City Literature Festival YouTube channel. Thank you so much. Thank you so much, sir. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Corinna. You've been great.
It's my pleasure to have you all here. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Can we end the meeting now?
Vision Beyond.